Stephanie lies on the warm ground. Above her, the sky is peppered with black and white ash clouds. Hot air burns in her lungs, the ash around her swirling into thick plumes until a vast darkness covers her, and she is truly alone in the dark. As a terrifying silence settles in, she realizes she has no idea where her father and sister are. She doesn't know if the other tourists are still alive. Beneath her, the volcano lets out a threatening rumble. Although it hasn't released a single drop of lava, Stephanie is about to be steamed alive. It's just after 2 in the afternoon on the 9th of December, 2019. Stephanie is certain that this is the moment she will die.
This is Mayday, a show about disasters. In this episode, we tell the story of the White Island volcano eruption, where a group of tourists found themselves abandoned on a volcanic island in the middle of an explosion. This episode is hosted by Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. Mayday is made by the podcast company Cast. A few hours earlier, 23-year-old Stephanie Browett is in a cabin on the cruise ship Ovation of the Seas. Monday, December 9th, 2019, begins as a quiet day. All is well and peaceful aboard the ship. Outside of Stephanie's round cabin window, the waves crash against the ship's huge hull. It's a familiar sight for Stephanie, whose blue eyes are used to the sea. Originally from the coastal city of Melbourne, Australia, Stephanie is currently hundreds of miles from home. She's on a family holiday in New Zealand to celebrate the 21st birthday of her younger sister, Crystal. At home in Australia, the family lives in a large house with their new family member, Arlo, a playful collie puppy. The puppy has a big place in Stephanie's heart, along with her passion for art and theater. Stephanie dreams of becoming an actor, and her love of the stage has led her to a university education where she has studied media, drama, and performing arts. She graduates just days before the family sets off on their cruise to New Zealand. Stephanie's long blonde hair is fixed in a loose bun at the nape of her neck. She's wearing a big Adidas shirt and sweatpants. Her outfit is complete with white sneakers that have been stained gray by the summer dust. Stephanie opted for a more casual outfit as she has quite the active day ahead of her with an excursion out to the volcano. Today, the cruise ship is set to pass a volcanic island north of New Zealand's North Island. Named White Island, the space is famous with movie scenes from Lord of the Rings, Mulan, and Narnia filmed there. Eager to explore, Stephanie, her sister Crystal, and their father Paul have decided to come along. While the rest of the family gets ready for the excursion, Stephanie's mother Mary decides to stay on the boat and rest. Stephanie walks out of their cabin and follows the small stream of passengers on their way to the volcano. What Stephanie doesn't know is that she will never return to the ship again. It takes 2 hours to get to the volcano from the port where the cruise ship is docked. To get there, Stephanie, her dad Paul, and little sister Crystal have to ride a bus and then a jet boat. The group consists of 4 guides and 38 tourists, most of whom are fellow Australians from the cruise. As they make their way to shore, the boat rocks in the waves and makes them feel seasick. The island is further away than Stephanie thought, and once she sees it, she's relieved to soon be ashore.
The volcano looms like a gigantic gray ashtray in the middle of the glittering sea. One of the volcanic walls has collapsed, making White Island look like a stone amphitheater. The remaining pointy mountain peaks rise above the beach, with a highest point of 1,053 feet above sea level. The island covers about 800 acres, and the ground has been sculpted by sea winds and solidified lava. The spectacular landscape seems to come from another planet, like a photograph from the moon or Mars. Seawater has seeped into the eroded volcanic crater and formed a shimmering green lake. Above the green water surface, thin strips of white smoke ooze up. The Maori people, indigenous to New Zealand, call the volcano Whakaari, which means to make visible. This rather mysterious name is a reminder that almost 70% of the volcano is hidden underwater. Only its face rises above the waves. Apart from being a spectacular backdrop, the small island was once used as a sulfur mine. But the mine closed in the 1930s, and since then, the island has been visited by scientists and tourists, either by boat or helicopter. Due to its location on the edge of two tectonic plates, New Zealand is frequently hit by earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. On Whakaari, or White Island, as the volcanic island is also known, volcanologists continuously monitor the island's volcanic activity to predict future eruptions. In fact, just 2 weeks before Stephanie and her family arrived, New Zealand authorities raised the alert level from 1 to 2 for volcanic threat. They warned that Whakaari may soon reach a level 3, an eruption. Despite this, the company organizing the tours did not mention anything about the potential dangers to the tourists.
After an uncomfortable ride, Stephanie, Paul, and Crystal disembark on the small jetty with the rest of the group. They're each given a gas mask and a yellow helmet before they start their trek toward the volcano crater. As they trek on, Stephanie starts to feel hot from the hike. She starts to regret her decision to come along, but her mood is soon uplifted by her father, Paul. He's the family joker, and despite all the dry dad jokes, he always makes them laugh, especially Crystal, whose loud laughter rubs off on everyone around her. Crystal is studying to be a veterinarian and has always been interested in animals and nature. At home in Melbourne, Crystal keeps her puppy Arlo and the family's two cats in her room, and Stephanie teases her that it looks and smells like a zoo. After a few chuckles at their father, the sisters look curiously around the volcano and begin snapping photos and videos on their cell phones. The stony landscape around them shifts through shades of gray, yellow, and red. Every now and then, a cloud of white steam billows out of hidden gas pockets, causing the group to be a bit more careful where they put their feet. The ground slopes more and more uphill, and small grains of gravel roll away under the soles of their shoes. After walking for half an hour, Stephanie overhears the guide saying something to one of the other tourists. He says the volcano is now at risk level 2 and approaching level 3, an outburst. Startled by what she hears, Stephanie's mouth goes dry. No one had informed her and her family about this, but surely the tour operator wouldn't bring them out here if it was dangerous. She decides to shrug it off and take a few pictures with her phone. After a few minutes, however, the guide announces the walk on the island must be cut short, as he is worried that the volcano may soon erupt. He suggests they have a quick look at the rim around the volcano and then head back to the boats.
After a few more minutes of walking, the tourists reach the crater. It's just before 2 in the afternoon when Stephanie finds herself teetering on the edge of the volcano. As she takes in the scene, a cloud of white smoke billows out of the hole and all the tourists rush to take photos in front of it. When it's Stephanie's turn, she poses with her dad and sister. They hold each other, smile behind their gas masks, and take a picture to show their mother when they get back to the cruise ship. Behind them is the small green lake in the middle of the crater. Stephanie doesn't know. She's looking straight into the eye of the explosion. She also doesn't know that only 7 minutes remain before the volcano will let out a rumbling breath. A short while later, the group starts moving down from the volcano crater, back towards the jetty and the boat. Stephanie has taken off her gas mask and joins Paul at the front of the group. But Crystal is not with them. She turns to look for her sister and spots her at the back of the group, talking to the guide. Behind them, smoke continues to rise from the volcanic crater. The only difference is that it is no longer white, but black. Paul also notices the smoke and calls out to Crystal, who has walked closer to take a photo. One of the guides hears Paul's words and sees the black smoke. He yells, "Run!" Far beneath the sea, something has changed. The heart of the volcano has begun to beat. Burning magma seeps out of the Earth's crust. It is so hot that the groundwater above evaporates immediately. The pressure becomes too great, and the water vapor explodes out of the volcano crater. It sweeps away rocks, ash, and anything else that gets in its way. The hot steam swallows the whole of White Island in one breath.
Stephanie has no time to think. Her legs just move and she takes off and runs for her life. A deafening sound cuts through the air like a thick tree trunk snapping in half. Behind her, a dark shadow rises in the sky. A huge black cloud of burning hot steam and ash. Stephanie tries desperately to put the gas mask back on while her right hand clutches her phone tightly. Before she can, she feels a wave of ash and stone hit her from behind. The pressure of the wave forces Stephanie to the ground and the gas mask slips out of her hands. She falls for what feels like an eternity, tumbling out of control with no sense of up or down. Then, her body hits the rocks and thumps against the ground. Everything finally comes to a halt. Stephanie gasps for breath, thinking she's surely about to die. The hot air burns in her lungs, and her skin feels like it's on fire. Around her, people scream as stones hurl through the air and across the land. The black smoke thickens until she can barely see further than a couple feet in front of her. Everything turns pitch black.
Stephanie has no idea where her father or sister are. The only thing she knows is that the ground she's lying on is far too hot. Her body is burned. When she looks at her hands, she is horrified to see that the skin has come off and her nails are hanging loose. Her body is in shock, and she can't feel the pain, but the sight terrifies her. A thought echoes in her head. She must try to get to the water. When she tries to get up, her legs feel like jelly, and it takes all the strength she has to get on her feet. Every step hurts, and she doesn't make it more than about 10 feet before she falls down a small hill. But the fall is not as hard as she expected. Stephanie lands in a pile of people. Everyone is covered in gray ash, and no one can move. One person lies flat on their stomach and screams in pain. Another tries to call for help. Stephanie lies quietly next to the others. Her breath hisses through her wounded lungs. Then she hears her name. Someone is calling out to her. Stephanie recognizes the voice. It's her dad. He has survived and lies some distance away in the ashes. "Yes," Stephanie replies. But she gets no answer.
After a while, it gets quiet around her. People have given up screaming. The bright sunlight finds its way through the ashes, which slowly begin to dissipate. The sun burns Stephanie's broken skin and makes the pain more violent. It feels like someone is peeling her nails, hair, and skin from her body. Through the pain, she hears her father calling her once more. He wants to make sure that she's conscious and that she does not give up. She answers him again with every ounce of energy that remains. Time feels endless, and Stephanie loses track of how long she's been there. All she can do is lie perfectly still and wait for help. But no one comes. She tries to breathe more slowly to save what little energy she has left. The volcano rumbles in the background. The eruption has subsided, but if there is another one, Stephanie knows she won't be able to escape. Paul keeps calling her name from time to time. Stephanie struggles to respond, but it's getting harder and harder to stay awake. Next to her, people are taking their last breaths.
When a whole hour has passed, suddenly a humming sound is heard above, coming closer and closer to the ground. Stephanie squints up at the sky. Through the ash, two helicopters manage to land next to the volcano crater. Stephanie sees two men run towards the group of people lying on the ground. They are local helicopter pilots who usually fly tours to Fakari. When they saw that the volcano was erupting, they immediately decided to help the tourists, who they knew were making tours to the island during the day. They had no idea what they would face, and therefore only managed to bring a first aid kit. But the situation in front of them is much worse than they could have imagined. The pilots assure Stephanie and the others that more rescue personnel are on the way to the island. But after a while, they are told that this is not the case. New Zealand authorities have banned all rescue helicopters from flying out to the volcano. They say it's too dangerous, as there could be another explosion. Therefore, there will be no more rescue missions coming their way. The two pilots are the only ones who can help the people on the ground, and they're running out of time. Many have difficulty breathing because their lungs have been so badly burned. Some are barely recognizable, as layers of skin have peeled off completely.
The pilots start loading the injured into their two helicopters. When they bend down over Paul to pick him up, Paul says he wants them to take his daughters first. Crystal is missing, but the pilots find Stephanie among the other people on the ground and pick her up. They put her in the front seat of one of the helicopters and help Paul and two other survivors into the back. The helicopter lifts off the ground, and Stephanie sees the volcano's huge ash clouds shrink to a gray smudge through the windows. She rocks back and forth in her seat, still in utter shock. Her eyelids flutter and she feels her body wanting to let go, but the pilot yells at her to hold on. Stephanie knows that if she closes her eyes, she will never wake again. After a 20-minute flight, the helicopter lands on the mainland, and Stephanie and Paul are taken to the hospital. The sounds of the doctor's voices are hazy, and the harsh fluorescent light stings her eyes. When Stephanie finally lets her eyelids close, she falls asleep immediately.
A total of 47 people were on the island during the outbreak. About half of them had finished their hike and were waiting down at the jetty, That group was evacuated by another tourist boat that was about to leave the island. Despite this, 4 people from the waiting group die. 20 people are found at the volcano crater, including Stephanie, who was standing in the middle of the eruption. The helicopters managed to pick up 12 of them. The 8 people left behind had already died. When the bodies are retrieved a few days later, 2 of them had disappeared out to sea from the heavy rainfall.
Stephanie wakes to the sound of beeping hospital machines. Confused, she looks down at herself. Thick, white bandages are wrapped around her entire body and head. She gazes at her hands that look like oven mitts under all the bandages, with fingertips barely sticking out from underneath. Her fingers have been burned so badly that they have turned jet black. As she looks around the room, Stephanie cannot recall where she is. Chaotic images of the volcanic eruption are etched on her retina, and the shock sends her into a rage. Next to the hospital bed sits Marie, watching over her daughter. Only after a few days awake does Stephanie begin to understand what's happened. She's been in an induced coma for 2 weeks, and now she's in a hospital in her home city of Melbourne, Australia. In the next room, Paul lies in a similar hospital bed. But Stephanie's younger sister, Crystal, is not with them. Crystal, with her brown eyes and infectious laugh, who always had a cat or dog with her wherever she went in the house, died on White Island a few days after her 21st birthday. Her body was picked up by helicopter along with the other deceased. Doctors tell Stephanie that she has burns on 70% of her body. Her hands are so burned that the tendons are visible, and with the nerve damage, she has hardly any feeling left. The black fingers can't be saved, and a large part of them will have to be amputated. Stephanie can't move or eat, and she's still too injured to visit her father in the next room. All that separates them is a hospital wall, yet Stephanie doesn't know how badly injured he is. After another 2 weeks, Paul's body can't take it anymore, and he passes away. After hearing even more devastating news, Stephanie feels like she's about to break. In the space of a month, she's lost both her sister and her father. In March 2020, Crystal and Paul are buried next to each other in their hometown of Melbourne.
Of the 12 people rescued by the helicopters, 10 will eventually die. Only Stephanie and 1 other survive. In total, the volcanic eruption takes 22 lives, and many of those who survive will have severe burn damage for life. Stephanie and the other survivors feel angry and betrayed, partly by the cruise company and tour operator that took them out to White Island, partly by the New Zealand authorities who initially refused to send any rescue personnel to the volcano. It wasn't until 2 hours after the eruption that additional rescue helicopters got to the island. Stephanie believes that if the rescue team had come sooner, more people might have survived. Maybe even Crystal or Paul. Fakari has had more outbreaks over the years. In 2013, hot mud bubbled up from the volcanic crater, and scientists refused to visit the island. In 2016, the volcano erupted again with hot steam, the same type of phenomenon that happened to Stephanie. Because it happened during the night, no one was hurt, and tours to the volcano continued. The company, White Island Tours, won an award just a year earlier for being one of New Zealand's safest places to work. But despite all of that, the question remains, why then were tours allowed to visit such an active volcano? Some argue that the cruise line and tour operators were ignorant of the risk of an eruption. Others say that small volcanic eruptions and earthquakes happen so often in New Zealand that no one took the increased activity of the volcano seriously. The tragedy on White Island has gone on to create a debate around New Zealand's adventure tourism industry. How close should tourists get to wild nature?
A year after the eruption in December 2020, Stephanie and her mother Marie sue the cruise company Royal Caribbean, which owns the ship Ovation of the Seas, for selling tickets to the volcano without informing about the risks. At the time of this podcast's production in 2022, the legal process is still ongoing. Due to the pandemic, much of the legal work has been postponed, and a major trial is scheduled to take place in July 2023. It is expected to take 4 months, as a total of 13 parties stand accused, including the family business that owns White Island and the tour operators who made trips out to the island. What makes this case special is that the New Zealand judiciary is also suing several government agencies, such as the Government Research Institute that measured the volcano's activity and the New Zealand Emergency Management Agency. Who or what will be found guilty remains to be seen. After almost 6 months, in May 2020, Stephanie is discharged from the hospital. She and her mother Marie go home to their big house in Melbourne. But the rooms feel empty without Paul and Crystal. Half the family has disappeared. While her puppy Arlo is excited to see her and pounces all over her, life at home no longer feels the same. Stephanie struggles to get well again. Operations and hospital visits have become a mainstay in Stephanie's life. She has to wear compression garments to allow the burned skin to heal, and 8 of her fingers are gone. Still, she knows she has to live. For her mother, Marie, and for Crystal and Paul. Stephanie opens up about her life story on social media and starts a YouTube channel. There, she shares knowledge about burn injuries and talks about her journey back to life. In the future, when her treatment is over, she hopes to continue with theater.
After this eruption, tours to the island have stopped, and the volcano remains alone. In the middle of the sea. The white smoke billowing from the volcanic crater is a constant reminder of the forces of nature and what can happen if you don't take them seriously.
This has been Mayday, about the volcanic eruption on White Island. This episode was hosted by Luke Welland and me, Maya Nalani. The script is written by Miranda Rettman, translated by Marcus Bowman, and edited in English by Gabrielle Gerbus. Mayday is made by the podcast company, Cast.